you like to take us down B, Ricky?
We've only got 20 minutes left. I'm wondering whether we should move on to the general topic, and if anybody wants to particularly talk about derecognition, you could raise that in amongst as one of the general points.
All right. Well, the last session is to just open up anything that you'd like to talk about, not necessarily what we've set out, but anything you'd like to talk about. So anybody's got anything they'd like to bring up at this stage, please feel welcome.
Just to raise a as your invitation of derecognition point, I kind of infer from derecognition material that this idea, what you have in mind isn't necessarily entirely control, because I've noticed this material about principal and agent. So you have to decide whether or not the transferee of these securities is acting as your agent, and that's all based on, it's very slim material, there's not very much in there, so I'm building on a bit of a narrow foundation, but it does appear to be putting in a kind of risk and rewards test that have you actually lost all the benefits of this asset. So I don't think it's quite articulated what the complete idea you have of derecognition, because it's clearly, I think, not based solely on loss of power over the thing. I think you've got something to do with principal agent in there, which is because you're trying to tackle the problems of the repo and the lease and the whatever, which are not fully explored. So I think that principal agent needs to be explained better as to what its role is and what the test is.
But I think the principal agent is part of control, though. I think if you concluded that you'd transferred it to somebody else but they were only holding it as agent for you, then you wouldn't you say that control hasn't transferred? And in the examples we've got in the DP, we discussed the possibility that it might have only been a transfer to somebody acting as your agent, in which case you wouldn't even really consider it for derecognition. And the debate is more about the cases where you conclude they've taken it as principal, but you've still got some of the risks and rewards, let's say. But, and what do you do in those cases?
But that makes is the transferee holding it as principal or agent the number one critical question for derecognition, doesn't it?
Well, I don't think it's the number one critical question, but it's something you have
to
assess.
Go to the next one if you don't yeah. do it. So that seems to be, whatever banner you put it under, that seems to be an incredibly important part of the framework, and it's pretty slimly dealt with. I think it needs some more. No.
Okay. Brenda.
Sorry, this is just one sort of final point on the recognition, really. I wondered if it was possible to perhaps put the threshold of something being expected into the framework, and then have it for the IASB to decide in a specific standard about something which has a lower threshold.
So rather than, so it's almost reversing it, so the default is
yes,
probable, but
I think it's going back to the concern about this very wide population that Martin raised, and just trying to narrow that down so that if there is something up there, then the IASB can draw the standard on it and tell us to but to recognise everything.
Yeah, I'd have a point related to the last part of the agenda, paper number 3 on partial, what I call partial recognition, and especially a bit surprised that in the 3 proposals which are included here, it seems to me that the last one might actually lead to an artificial increase in the balance sheet. And it also, I think it would be good to link it to the unit of account, probably.
I think that does have to link to the unit of account. Yeah.
Sorry, Joan, what was it?
I was just saying that I think this last, we're on page 10 of agenda, aren't we? Yeah.
Yeah.
And the suggestions of the various ways that you could specify what should happen if there's the entity retains control of one part of an asset but not the whole asset, and it does interact with the question of unit of account. Yeah.
Right, Phineas.
Yeah, just 2 final comments, really. I think think some of the discussions we've had today have shown really that there is a large role for uncertainty in accounts, and I think that leads me to the conclusion that prudence has a role to play in the conceptual framework. Obviously, there's been a great amount of debate about that, and I don't want to sort of recreate that debate right now, but I think the previous definition, or rather reference to prudence, was absolutely fine, and I don't understand really why we moved away from that, because prudence isn't bias, as you said in your previous description of it. If there's a problem with the word prudence, we're fine with caution. I mean, the analogies that we've discussed today show that the role of prudence and how the management interprets some of those decisions has an important role for shareholders in terms of how they can look at that situation, for example, with the football transfer. And just secondly, on stewardship, I think Jed made some good points at the outset about going beyond what we've got there. I think from our perspective as institutional investors, those two lines really don't cut the mustard. I think stewardship is just much more important than that, and it's much more multifaceted than simply praising management performance. You've got the market in terms of buy and sell, you've got the actual shareholders in terms of your decision making over your property and your assets, you've got the shareholder body in terms of what you're actually going to approve by way of issuing shares or by M&A, etc. And only then do you get down to whether you want to actually appoint management and so forth. And all of these things, I think they go beyond decision usefulness. And it goes back to true and fair view. So I think, we'll do our best to actually give representations in our submissions to why we think it should go much further. But I just want to, at this opportunity to tell you that I think it's much more than two lines.
Two points. I'd be interested if you could spell out how it gets back to true and fair. In your submission. And on the prudence one, of course, we're being backed into a difficult situation because we've got threats on our funding if we don't move towards prudence. I mean, there's a chance that it's being debated in the Commission. Then, of course, if we do reintroduce it, we could be accused of lacking independence and giving into our
I'm not aware of that.
There's a movement within ECOFIN and the Commission to make our funding conditional on us reintroducing prudence and some other things, and that's backing us into a very, very difficult situation. But that's something we're going to have to deal with. Richard.
Yeah, particularly it was the European Parliament particularly active there. People have mentioned one of the, in effect, one of my points I was going to say, opening up the earlier chapters, I think, is unavoidable for those sort of prudent stewardship, all those sorts of issues. So I think we're likely to say that, but that you ought to do it and make a coherent whole, because the objectives do influence what ultimately you're saying about on other subjects that are the subject of the bit you've written recently. Two things that I think I would also say: unit of account. I do think we haven't got enough in the conceptual framework on that. You've come up with this idea of assets as bundles of rights. So I think you've got to have something in the framework which talks about unbundling or unit of account or however it's described. But I think you haven't got enough on that, and I don't think it's the best answer to just say, well, we'll deal with that on a standard by standard basis. I should hope you might be able to think about some, and come up with some general concepts about how you'd handle that. The other one I found a bit missing was, and I suppose this comes back to when you try and define profit, is capital maintenance adjustments. Now, I think that, we think there's, I don't think there's this is another area where I think you need to have something in there, and I think what you've done so far highlights the fact that there is there is another change in assets and liabilities that you're potentially not putting in profit and loss account at OCI, and that you've identified as capital maintenance adjustments, but you haven't really said what those are. And that's pretty relevant when you've identified IAS 16's revaluation model as potentially a capital maintenance adjustment. So I think those would be the my main points.
I was just going to ask about own credit within the conceptual framework. You talk about it in measurement, and I think you correctly reflect that at initiation the interest rate charge or whatever correctly already reflects the cost of own credit, and the challenges around recognising changes in that and the pros and the cons. But I didn't see any conclusions around the framework about how you would approach it, either a going concern basis or some other basis.
Okay, good point. Tom?
I would like to support Richard that capital maintenance, that is an issue that should be addressed more. At this, those days, the inflation is not that high, but there might be periods that it is higher and it is not hyperinflation, and then we will need some concepts to see how to reflect the effects in your financial statements. Is it profit or not?
By the way, when you say inflation is not that high, we are getting some pressure from South America, for instance.
Yes, sorry. but that's right. You're right.
Thailand.
In terms of a unit of account, I think the unbundling that is an important issue to be addressed in the framework, because we see it in some standards. So what is the basis behind it? And we had some debate about the recognition, and we expressed some concerns, but I have to admit that I'm rather happy that we are trying to find another concept that we now have, because when we expect that the cash inflows is 49% or cash outflows, then we do not recognize, and when it is 51% we do, and that is a concept that's not that useful in my view. So looking for ways to improve in that area, I think it's very important, and I would like to stress that.
Thanks, Matt.
Thanks. The final point I wanted to make was around, I think you touched on it earlier, Ian, was around what is actually done with the conceptual framework when it is concluded, and being clear whether that there isn't an immediate plan to go back and review all existing standards and adjust them so that they are compliant with the new framework, but then recognising that puts it in a slightly difficult position of having a conceptual framework which is different from existing standards, particularly when it goes on to talk about it being used to interpret existing standards. So does it make sense to be interpreting an existing old standard which was developed on the basis of a different conceptual framework, trying to interpret that under the new conceptual framework? Sounds like a recipe for...
Our only consolation there is the existing standards don't necessarily comply with the existing framework. So we might be in a much worse position than we are already.
And also that while there are things being added to the conceptual framework, it isn't, I think, a 90-degree turn. Sure. on many points, and in some cases we're trying to take issues like the uncertainty in the liabilities that have been addressed already at a standards level and take some of the learning and the thinking from that and move it into the conceptual framework, because it isn't there. Not necessarily just cutting and pasting and not necessarily replicating all the thinking, but it's not that they're too fundamentally incompatible.
And I accept that most things will be fine. It's just that there will be a population
Sure. I was also interested in due course, and we won't have time today because we've only got 5 minutes, on the debt equity question and the whole concept of another statement on moves in equity and the like, which we haven't addressed at all today, but I think it's a very interesting area.
Could I just pick up on the points that Richard and Tom raised? I think you raised a couple of points which are quite interesting. Capital maintenance, I think, suggesting that we should address it. And I think the useful thing for us to know would be, should we address it now or can we afford to put it off? Because what our sense was that it wasn't sufficiently urgent that we needed to deal with it at this stage and that it might get in the way of getting some other improvements to the framework done. So I think it would be quite helpful if you comment on that sort of timing aspect. In terms of units of account, I mean, I agree with you absolutely. It would be nice to have something in the framework that helps with units of account. But we haven't found it yet. It does say it would be nice to have it. It's not going to tell us anything we don't already know. So if you have any ideas about how we should look for it, that would be great.
Right. Anybody else like to add comments? No? In which case, I'd like to thank you all very much, very sincerely. I think it's been an excellent discussion. And I appreciate you coming along and expressing your views so frankly. As I say, we're not holding you to those views.
Yeah, they are.
It's our personal views.
I think discussions have not advanced that. You know, there's still a lot of discussion to take place.
It's early in the process. We've got a long way to go, but it's good to keep the conversation flowing as we go. So thanks very much.